Okay, this hour we're going to take your phone calls with Neil Donald Walsh. Of course, you've heard him before on this program. We're talking about the documentary, I Got. I want to play a little clip of it for you, and then we'll take a quick break and come back with the rest of Neil and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. So here's a clip from the documentary, I Got.
From the time written language was developed, and perhaps even before that, humans have had a belief in beings they considered more powerful than themselves. These beings, later called gods, were thought to control every aspect of human life, from the weather to the fate of every individual. The early gods of Sumeria, Babylon, Egypt, Greece, and Rome were powerful entities cast in the image of humans with their own foibles, egos, desires, and weaknesses. They were worshipped, appeased, sacrificed to, and above all, feared. But around 4,000 years ago, the concept of who and what God is began to change. It started when a man called Abraham, who, along with several others, began the teachings and rituals of the early Israelites and the Jewish religion. They claimed that there was only one God, a God who participates in human affairs, gives orders, rules, and advice, punishes disobedience, and cares about the lives of mere humans. And he would have no other gods before him. The notion that there is only one God has influenced people's beliefs about the divine more than any other theology before or since. And while most contemporary spiritual philosophies are now centered around the belief in a single all-powerful deity, views and ideas about God still differ as much today as they did since the dawn of humankind. So, why is any of this important? Does it really matter? It is important because humanity's ideas about God have, throughout history, created humanity's experience of life itself, all over this planet. Some of those ideas are believed by billions of people. Very few cultures on Earth have no story at all about life, or how it came to be, and about the source of that life, to which they refer in various ways. The modern human cultural institution called religion is an expression of what groups of people believe to be true about the holy being whose name they so revere. These religions and spiritual belief systems attempt to answer some of humanity's biggest questions. Who or what is God? What does God want? Is God going to judge us after we die if we don't do what God wants? If so, on what basis will God judge humanity? Is there an absolute right and wrong? If God created everything, what is right and wrong? And what is good and evil? Why does evil and suffering even exist in the world? What is humanity's true relationship with God? And finally, why do people believe what they believe?
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Neil Donald Walsh. We'll get to your phone calls in just a second. I like that documentary. I like that little clip we used, Neil.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that you do. I'm hoping that people will find the whole film interesting, and in that it gives us an insight into how many people around the world are answering those questions that were posed, you know, in that narrative. I'd like to just take a second and close the circle with where I was going with Pope John Paul.
Yeah.
The reason I brought that up was he actually went to the jail cell of his would-be assassin.
That's right.
And he did not offer that man forgiveness. He offered that man a blessing. He went there to bless him because he understood why the man did what he did. That understanding is not condoning. He didn't condone what the man did, but he understood what the man did. And understanding replaces forgiveness in the mind of the master. Therefore, the Pope went to his cell and offered him his papal blessing, setting an example for the world entire.
I'm not sure I could have done what he did.
Many of us could not have, but that's probably why he's the Pope, or was, and why we are regular, ordinary people. But I think that there are more and more people these days who can rise to the occasion in that extraordinary way, when we begin to understand what could cause people to behave in the way they're behaving. What injury? You know, there's a conversation with God offered me a great question in this regard, and I was invited to ask this question of anyone who may have injured me or injured another in my place of in a way that I've observed it. The question is this: what hurts you so bad that you feel you have to hurt me in order to heal it.
And he was paroled, by the way, the would-be assassin, Mehmet Ali Agha. They paroled him after a while. Maybe it was because of the blessing.
I'm not surprised at all. I'm sure the Pope had something behind the scenes to do with that as well.
Now, he did want to meet with Pope Francis, and they denied his request.
Yeah. Well, that would, yeah.
I would too, I guess.
Yeah, I would think so. The better part of valor.
Let's take some calls. I do
think there's something to be learned here, however, from that entire experience.
I think so, too. South Carolina we go. Let's go to Melissa, east of the Rockies, to get things started here. Hi, Melissa.
Hello. I'm calling in response to George's question about why there's suffering and Neil's response that it's not created by God or ordained by God. It's just part of being here. That's that free will and the give and take. And I call it the gray area. And I think people our age are just so determined to make everything black and white. And I don't mean racially. I just mean people want answers.
I understand.
Be this way or that way. They can't live in the gray area. And that's, I think, what God gave us is the gray area, because that's how we grow. That's how we become compassionate. That's how we learn. And I was going to preface this by saying, George, I grew up in Michigan. I'm 63. I was raised Catholic. And so we have things in common.
A lot in common.
And so when Neil referenced Kubler-Ross, I was a hospice volunteer for 7 years. That's how you get in touch with God. You go to a place that's really uncomfortable, and you say, I want to help people who are suffering. And you come out of those homes, and you say, oh, my goodness, I went there to help, and I've been blessed.
Yeah.
It's the exact opposite of what you expect to do. You want to serve, but you come out of there feeling like the angels carried you through. And this is what's missing, I think, in our culture in a big way. And suffering is important. The people who suffer and or die, including tiny babies and all the horrible things that happen, it makes you awake. It makes you aware if you're willing to cross that line and go there. And it's something that we're not taught that, and it's missing. And that to me is the real answer. And I wanted to ask Neil also about Varieties of Religious Experience, William James, that book. It was a series of lectures that he put into book form, and that's life-changing because he's the person who said, I look at life, or people want to look at life as the champagne glass half full, and some people look at it as half empty. And by the end of his research, he decided that the people who look at life as champagne glass half empty are the ones who are willing to suffer for others,
mm-hmm.
into the uncomfortable and unpleasant things and serve. And I think that's what really Jesus taught. I would just love your response.
I love it. Thanks, Melissa. Neil, take it away.
I think that suffering is not necessary inside the human experience. Pain and suffering are not the same thing. Pain is an emotional or physical experience objectively, and suffering is our subjective thought about it. That is our idea that it should not be happening. I've seen women in childbirth. I've had the pleasure and the honor of seeing a woman in childbirth, and she was not suffering, this particular lady that I observed, at all, because she understood that pain and suffering are two entirely different experiences. So with my first response to people who suffer on behalf of others, it's all, it sounds wonderful, but an enlightened master would not suffer at all, because that master would understand that pain and suffering are two entirely different things, and suffering is our subjective judgment about the pain and our announcement that the pain should not be happening. But if you think the pain should be happening, and in fact, in a sense, you want it to happen, as a woman in childbirth would say, bring on the pain and bring on the new life, that's an entirely different experience altogether. I want to make another point here, too, my dear friend, that truth of the matter is that the disasters we're talking about, that we've referred to a number of times now here in this program, we are responsible, that is humanity. Human beings are responsible for more of those disasters than we might have thought. We're responsible at a very deep level for more, even the natural disasters, the so-called earthquakes, the hurricanes, and so forth. we can get into a two-hour discussion of how human behaviors have created climate changes that have produced environmental disasters on this planet. And anthropologists can talk all about that, and so can scientists. If you don't think that humanity, human beings, are responsible at a much higher level than you think that they are for the great tragedies, even the poisoning of children, for that matter, just travel to Flint, Michigan.
Ah. Horrible situation there, Neil, isn't it? Oh, my gosh. Can't get much worse. Next up, let's go to Shenny in West Virginia. Hello there, Shenny. Go ahead.
Hello. Hey, I was kind of calling about what the last caller just spoke about, but to me, death and dying among humans is like the end of life as we know it. And to God, our death is nothing. I mean, he created us. He can give our life back. He can do so many things that, to him, it's not as huge a deal as it is to us. You know, I mean, loss is horrible and everything, but God created us. We were born into bad things, into evil. It came from the Garden of Eden, you know. We were born into sin. Bad things are going to happen. You know, God doesn't. I hear that often. People blame God. You know, why would God do this? And he absolutely does not. He's a loving God. And, you know, for him to just step in and do miracle after miracle just wouldn't be feasible, you know, in this day and age. You know, we kind of said we could live without God in the Garden of Eden, and he's letting us give it a whirl. So, I mean, that's just my take on it. Decided to throw that in there.
All right. Thanks for your comment, Cindy. Do you believe, Neil, in extraterrestrial life? There's a method to this question.
I certainly do. It would be foolhardy to imagine that among the billions and trillions and kajillions of star systems and planets in the universe, and we are now told, by the way, by physicists, that our universe, if you can imagine this, is one of a number of universes that we live in, actually a multiverse, as enormous as the universe is, it's one of a number of universes. So it would be absolutely, in my view, foolhardy to assume that we are the only intelligent life. I'm not even sure we are an intelligent life, but the only sentient species in the cosmos. That simply doesn't. The odds are totally against it, and it's simply not my my awareness.
Do you think they too are searching for these same answers we're looking for?
I think some of them are, and I think some of them have already found the answers, and some of them are very clear about what the answers are. So I think that the response to that question is all over the board.
We touched on evil for a little bit, but I feel as if it's getting bigger. Evil is growing, not reducing. What about you?
I agree that certain manifestations of human behavior that we would call decidedly negative are occurring with greater frequency and with larger and larger negative dynamics. I think that's the natural outcome and the natural consequence of the search you just referred to. As we get closer to answers that many people find untenable, unacceptable, we find ourselves, you know, it's the last gasp. It's the final thrust of a civilization that cannot imagine it's been so wrong about so many things for so long. So we will do anything to make ourselves right, including kill each other in the name of God. But I think you're perfectly right. We are at odds now. We don't know what to make of it anymore. We do every other day on the internet, we see another shooting of by one person or another. You know, the police are either being shot at or are shooting others, and all the rest that's going on, you know, in our world. You're perfectly right. I observe the same thing. But it is what I described in my book, The Storm Before the Calm. It is a process by which we are dissembling ourselves, that we are in the space right now of overhauling humanity. This is called the overhaul of humanity, not the destruction of humanity, not the end of humanity, but the overhaul in the same sense that we overhaul an engine, that at the end of the overhaul, the engine works better than it ever did before. So right now we are seeing the systematic overhaul of humanity in which we are taking apart all of the systems that have held us together for so long, but not served us very well. And we're now seeing, oh, that doesn't serve us, this doesn't serve us, that doesn't serve us. Doesn't serve us for a clerk of the court, for instance, to say that two people in a particular county in a particular state cannot get married because they are of the same gender. We are just looking at that now and saying, you know what, I'm sorry. It does not serve us to say no to love because you imagine that the God of your understanding says it's inappropriate. Since when is love inappropriate and based on gender and not on the feeling in the human heart? So we are coming to cusp with this because there, you know, reasonable people can reasonably disagree about things like that, but some people do not agree in a reasonable, I mean, disagree in a reasonable way, and that creates enormous conflict. And that's what's happening right now. We are overhauling ourselves and deciding some things about who we are and who we choose to be.
The world has gone crazy.
It is a place of craziness because we have looked at how crazy we have been. And as you move toward a higher level of sanity, the craziness emerges and we become clear about how crazy we've been. And people who are crazy for, crazy in love with, the way things used to be, as I said, are hanging on with white knuckles. They're just hanging on to yester moment. No, 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 don't change anything. Don't change anything. Stop this. So, yes, we are acting crazy because our craziness is being revealed even to us. This is an example of craziness. we in this country, we actually sanction the murder of people by the government, the killing on purpose of human beings as a means of demonstrating that killing human beings is inappropriate. And we fail to see the contradiction.
Next up, let's go to Ted in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Fred, you're on with Neil, Donald Walsh. Go ahead.
Yes, I was wanting to know, did angels come back and have their lives to show, like God showed them their lives they had?
Do you deal at all with the angelic realm, Neil?
Yes, the conversation with God material did get into that, not in great depth, but I asked some of the same questions that this listener is asking now. Are there such things as angels? And, you know, are there such things as spirit guides? Is there a difference between the two? And what is the purpose and function of angels, so to speak, in the universe? Angels simply being a label, a word we've given to essences, energies, of souls, if you will, that have taken on a particular form and a particular function in their eternal journey of evolution that we've referred to a bit earlier. So yes, are there souls that have assumed that particular form and function during this part of their journey through the eternal process of evolution? Absolutely. My own publisher told me a story at one point of driving down the road late at night after a party. He was going home. It was 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and he was coming. It was deserted. Of course, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody around. But he came up to a particular street corner where there was a stop sign, and he stopped there dutifully, and even though there was nobody around, and then he started to go again, and the angel that he heard, he tells the story later, he heard the voice, "Stop." And he hit the brakes for no reason. There was no reason to. And just then some teenage kid, 16 or 17-year-old driver, appeared out of nowhere, going like a bat out of hell, driving 120 miles or whatever, and zipping through that intersection. And Bob Friedman, my publisher, says, you know, if I hadn't listened to that voice, I wouldn't be here to talk about it. Where did that voice come from? Is there such a thing as a guardian angel who's walking, watching over, who's, if you please, metaphorically
yes.
speaking, assigned to certain humans?
Or is it that ability within ourselves to be able, like radar, to sense this? We're going to come back more with Donald Walsh and your final questions on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, final segment with Neil Donald Walsh. Neil, when people want to look at this documentary, I suggest they go to your website, igodthefilm.com, or is there a better spot?
Well, they can find it at amazon.com. I think there's one place that's available. It's also available at the website of the people who made the film, looking for that information, Beyond Words Publishing. So they can go to beyondwordspublishing.com or amazon.com and just type in, you know, I God the Movie, and they can order it there. Beyond Words Publishing, at the same people who distributed The Secret, a highly successful film.
Oh, sure.
A few years back. So they're hoping to find basically the same audience.
And they just probably will, I think.
That would be nice.
If you look into a crystal ball, where's this planet going to head 10 years from now?
Well, that's the question of the day, isn't
it? Sure
is. And we're now deciding what that answer is. I believe, and I hope I'm right about it, but I believe that we are in the middle of a 30-year process. I talked about this about 15 years ago. At that time, I said we were at the beginning of a 30-year process, which I'm calling the new Renaissance, a 30-year period as opposed to the 300 years of the first Renaissance. Now 10 times faster for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is our ability to communicate instantly around the world. I believe we're in the middle of a 30-year process that I've called, as I mentioned a minute ago, the upheaval, the overhaul of humanity. In the book, The Storm Before the Calm, and where I see us going is to a place where we finally discontinue, by popular demand, if you will, our utter dysfunction as a species of sentient beings, where we finally say things like, a point I made earlier, like, you know, hello, guys, it's totally hypocritical to kill people as a means of stopping people from killing people. Therefore, the death penalty on its surface is insanity. And we're beginning to look at other ways as well that we are insane. So where are we going to be 15 years from today? I think we are going to begin the long road toward the experience of ourselves as a truly enlightened species, highly evolved beings. But there's going to be tremendous, tremendous, well, storm before the calm between now and then, and we're seeing that right now. Even those who wouldn't have thought a few years ago that they would disagree with certain religious movements are now starting to step back and say, now just a minute, now just a minute. And the world is beginning to coalesce. You know, politics and geographical circumstances create strange bedfellows. Watch the coalition beginning to form around some of what's happening in Syria and elsewhere. So I think that in 15 years, we're going to find ourselves on the other side of all of this, because this process is, as I mentioned a while ago, exponentially moving forward. It's not, and it's increasing. It's picking up speed, actually, almost by the day, if you will. So I'm looking forward, and I see a bright and wonderful, positive future for humanity. But it's not guaranteed. Obviously, it's not guaranteed. Like the birthing of anything, there is great risk in the birthing of humanity, the rebirth of our species into the cosmic community of sentient beings.
Neil, I don't think we are, but what if we're wrong about God's existence?
Then we are, and nothing matters with regard to our religion or our spirituality. Then if we are wrong about the existence of God, and part of what will happen in the next 15 years, by the way, is as part of this process we just described, will be our coming to a conclusion as a collective collective known as humanity, coming to a conclusion that is the largest number of us with regard to that question. And if the conclusion is that, you know what, there really isn't a thing called God, then we will nevertheless sit down together and say, given that, would it not serve us then to collectively agree on what the guidelines should and ought to be with regard to basic human behaviors? What do we agree with each other is sane and not insane, acceptable and unacceptable, purposeful and non-purposeful, and beneficial and non-beneficial? It might be in some ways, it's interesting, you know, but in some ways it might be of enormous benefit to humanity to consider the question, how would we behave if we didn't think we had God's instructions and a God to give them with regard to how we should behave and how we should interact with each other as human beings? We'd be forced then to abandon any notion that we simply follow the instructions given to us from someone on high, and we begin to create our own set of morals and understandings and you know, behavioral standards. Might not be the worst thing that ever happened to us.
Let's go now to final callers. Mason in Utah, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Hello, Mason. Go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. Thanks for holding so long.
Yes. I was wondering, George, if you and Neil have ever heard about Autobiography of a Yogi. It's a book written by Paramahansa Yogananda.
Yes.
Well, of course, we would have to, both George and I would have to have been born on another planet to not be aware of that book.
Okay. That book, for me, has inspired me so much and has really answered most of the questions I ever had about God.
Very spiritual.
I just wanted to share that with you.
Well, you're right. It's a very spiritual work with an individual who, in his own way, had his own belief systems. And that's what you've been talking about all night, Neil, that people should be able to have their own belief systems.
Well, they do, whether they should be able to or not. They do, in fact. It's demonstrably true, it's observably true, that people do have their own belief systems. All we have to do now is create an overarching belief system that says that this is okay.
So true, so true. Michael in Virginia Beach, Virginia, east of the Rockies. Hi, Michael.
Hi, George. Thank you for having Neil on.
Sure.
Neil, greetings from Hampton Roads.
Oh, my goodness.
Neil, most cultures, most religions have a tradition which speaks of a global flood. That suggests that there was a time in history when all peoples had a common global experience.
Yep.
The most detailed account of that experience is given to us by the Hebrews in a book which we call the Bible. If the God of the Bible did intervene in history and did communicate with men in an intelligible way, then perhaps he was concerned about preparing us for the greater cosmos community. And that would require the setting down of rules in how to develop a society so that it will fit in with the greater cosmic community.
Yeah, let me ask you a question, my friend. What part of the Bible do you think would contain some of those rules? Might it be the book of Deuteronomy, where it says that if a man disobeys his parents, he should be taken to the town gates and stoned to death? Would it be the book of Deuteronomy, where it indicates that if a woman is found to not be a virgin when she's married, that she should likewise be taken to the town gates and stoned to death? Have you read the book of Deuteronomy?
Yeah, I think it would be that part for this reason. A God of infinite ages would also have infinite experience with dealing with societies to come up with that rule.
Wow. Well, you know what, my friend? I honor and respect any point of view that you may hold around all of this. I simply do not and cannot share it. I cannot even believe for one moment in a God who would say that if a child turns out to be a profligate and disobeys his parents, that they should be stoned to death. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree with you, Neil. It's just it's baffling. Even when I was younger, reading the Bible in my Catholic catechism classes, and you see the anger of this God, it didn't make any sense to me.
It's not even it doesn't even meet any reasonable moral standard.
I mean, I kept saying to myself, the people who wrote this were very angry people.
And people who needed to control as well, not just angry, but people
and
who
control.
Were intent on controlling the masses and using fear as a means of doing so.
Oh, doesn't that sound like today, too?
Precisely.
They're doing it all over again.
Yes.
Broward County, Florida, Murray's with us, first-time caller. Hi, Murray.
Okay. I have a confession.
All right.
I actually called a couple of times about 25 or 30 years ago. Preliminary, one day I was talking with the Lord. You think I'm being figurative. I'm not. And I said, just who are you? I already knew the answer. He said, I'm not God. He said, I'm me. I'm myself. I am what I am, and that's all I am. And as far as the increase of evil that you're seeing, that's in the book. We're in the age of lawlessness. and I know how it's going to end.
How's it going to end, Murray?
I know because Gabriel told me.
What did he tell you, Murray?
He said in 1975, he said, 40 more years till the destruction of the Earth. And he told me it'll be one cobalt bomb.
That was 75. He said 40 years. He missed it by a year.
No, not really, because you don't understand the Bible. That's apparent.
Sure I do.
Moses was
You just said he told you 40 years, Murray.
Moses was 40 years in the desert with the people. Does that mean 40 times 365 and a quarter? No, it means an entire generation. If there is a cobalt bomb, and you know that in the past, whenever they have something, they use it. Somebody has it, and it's going to, you're in the time of increasing evil of the lawless man.
Well,
and
that's true.
It's going to be used soon, so you better get ready.
Well, there's not much we can do if it goes off, is there?
No, that's not how you get ready. You get right with God. That's how you get ready.
How do you get right with God? This is the information of the century, and this entire program has led up to this revelation from you. How do you get ready and get right with God?
Well, you start praying, Our Father, you are in heaven, may your name be honored, and so on.
Well, we've been doing that, Murray, but I don't know if that'll do any good if a bomb like that goes off. Neil?
Yes, I agree. And I would love Murray to tell me what happens if we're not right with God. Here we go again with the fear. Either get right with God, or not only will you die with the cobalt bomb, but after you die, something apparently horrible will happen to you.
Fire and brimstone for all of us, Neil.
I mean, horrible, horrible outcomes. As if the fire and brimstone that would be resulting from a cobalt bomb wouldn't be enough. God would say, sit up there and say, you think that's something. You weren't right with me. And by the way, how does being right with God look like? What does that look like? We have to believe in God in a certain way? Do we have to adopt a certain particular religious or spiritual point of view? Do we have to, you know, so what behaviors are required? What thoughts are required for us to be right with God? Well, of course, organized religion has been trying to tell us all about that for the past several thousand years. And no organized religion, from my observation, has come to a conclusion with which reasonable people can agree. So I'd like to know, you know, how we get right with God and what happens if we're not right with God. But frankly, I think that human beings are losing patience with themselves with regard to this idea that if we're not right with God, not only will we die here on earth, but after we die on earth, we will be subjected to even greater and eternal suffering, because God is going to make us suffer for eternity, forever and ever, and even forevermore, because we weren't right with God. But God won't tell us how to get right with him. And what do? Make the sign of the cross three times? Don't eat meat on Fridays? You know, what does it take? Wear certain clothing? Make sure you're covered from head to toe if you're a woman? I mean, what does it take to be right with God? I would challenge Murray to send us a document. Give us, you know, send in to George, and he'll read it on the air, Murray's idea of what specifically what it takes to be right with God and what will happen if we don't do it.
And, you know, I'm continually baffled, Neil, by people who claim the rapture is here, like that late Harold Camping, who's no longer with us. And he had followers who actually depleted their bank accounts for him because they thought the end was near.
Yeah. Well, you know, what people get to believe what serves them to believe. I'm not going to criticize people's beliefs directly, but I'm going to say that I don't share them, and I don't think that holding those beliefs has done a darn bit of good for the world at large. I think that embracing a whole new idea of who and what God is, who and what we are, why we're here on the earth, and the larger purpose for life itself, I think those new ideas is what will make life better and even glorious for us on earth, even if it is going to end in the day after tomorrow. At least those last 2 days will give us an opportunity to express and experience who we really are. And then, after we are all killed, after the great demise of humanity because of the cobalt bomb, we will then move into another realm where we will look back on all of this and say, oh my, oh my, oh my, did we ever have that wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing that he said that was probably true is, mankind is stupid enough to do something dumb.
I couldn't agree more. So it's our opportunity now. I agree completely with Murray on that as well as you do. And if there's anything left for us to do, it's to go out and model the behavior that could cause those outcomes not to occur.
Absolutely. Neil, thanks again for being on the program. Love it when you're on. Neil Donald Walsh. For Jeff DeRay, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.